What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. This one is interesting. We went through three distinct areas of discussion today. We started off with a really in-depth discussion about creating content when you've got an online business, particularly an e-commerce business. When we say content, we mean user-generated content or content to market your product online. This will be really, really helpful for all of you that have any kind of physical products business, or in fact, even any service that you need to market on Meta, on Instagram, etc. Then we talked about a real estate development that James and Mark are doing in Burleigh Heads, and it's a sort of $4 million entry point, $22 million exit point. I know that sounds big numbers and out of the realm for many people. We talk about how you can do those deals, what they're actually doing, what the deal is, and how you can do it without any of your own money. And we give you a whole bunch of resources to learn more and actually follow that journey. And then we talked at the end about a discussion I had and a meeting I had in Cyprus. I'm actually in Florence, Italy right now today. But earlier in the week, I was in Cyprus and met with a guy who lived in Lebanon in 2019 when the Lebanese government, kind of the banking system collapsed and everybody lost all their money. The ATMs didn't work. Nearly 7 million people on the street the next day with no cash as it all just got confiscated. And we talked about the reality of living through that, really kind of an interesting discussion. So those are the three major parts of the pod today. And we ended with the promotion of one of you guys, our listeners, and your business. And we show you the product that this person sells and give you a little shout out for free as well. So with that said, let's jump into the pod. As always, like, subscribe, comment, get engaged. We love you guys. Thank you for watching and we'll see you next week. Enjoy this one. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. We are back for another week and this one promises to be awesome. Like all the ones before, a mixed bag of our lives in business and investing. I'm joining you this morning from Florence, Italy. The boys are back home in Australia, Byron Bay by the look of it, with Mark, and Burleigh Heads for the other boys. Nice to see you guys. Welcome to the pod.
What's going on, Adam?
Nice to be here. I'd rather be where you are, but anyway.
Well, right now I'm looking out over Florence, like literally out of the hotel room. It's absolutely beautiful here, and we're about to start a week-long tour through Bordeaux and Modena and a whole bunch of places around here. So it's actually pretty exciting. It's a whole week with people. There's a group of about 10 of us going on this private tour. So we're doing a food and wine tour through Bordeaux and whatnot. So it's going to be great fun. So it's awesome to be here. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world, I reckon. You guys have been, right?
Yeah, multiple times. Unbelievable.
Anyway, guys, so let's kick it off. We've got a lot to cover today. We've got Dan and Mark and Eric, you guys are going to talk about your meeting this week, which I think would be really good for anybody who owns an e-com business and is faced with that constant need for content. And we might kick off with this one because, you know, I always say to people when they come to me about a business idea, they're always like, I've got this great product, got this great thing. And, you know, I always do what I call a day one test, which is, okay, you've got, just imagine you've got this great idea and it's not just an idea now. You've got the logo, you've got the product, you've got everything that's, you know, perfect. How are you actually going to sell this thing? And if you're an e-com seller, you very quickly realize that you need content. It's not actually in the product development anymore. You've got to completely change hats to become a marketer and a salesperson. You have to actually move this stuff. And if you're outside of the big platforms like Amazon, if you're actually trying to own your own customer, like on Shopify, or which is really where the real value accretion is these days, it's a mission. So, Mark, maybe you can sort of bring the audience up to speed with a little bit about, you know, why you had the meeting with Eric and Dan. And for context for the listener, Dan is responsible. He's not on the pod today, but Dan is responsible for all the traffic at Eric's business. So for those of you just joining the pod now, Eric is the guy with the baseball cap on. He owns a big e-com company in Australia, one of three or four owners, called mxstore.com.au, $100 million a year business. And Dan is the founding partner responsible for traffic. So, Mark, fill us in, mate. What happened this week? You had a meeting with Eric and Dan about your fledgling startup, getting it going, and, what was the meeting for? What happened? What did you take?
Yeah, we kind of spoke about this last week when I'd sent you guys a proposal from Meta Ads agency. And they were basically offering a tiered scale. So the more money that I spend, the more money that they make without any interest or consideration for our profit margins. And then at the end of the juicy proposal was an offer for equity. So as they hit certain milestones, 100,000, 200,000 and 300,000, they would obtain a piece of the equity, again, with no skin in the game with relation to profit margins, et cetera, just revenue. And I sent it around to you guys last week and you guys are like, what the fuck? Like, and Adam, you made the point how it can be really enticing and intoxicating when someone comes along and offers to take things off your hand, especially considering I haven't spent any time on this business since like November last year, right? I've just been having my team kind of run it and try and get Shopify up and going. And it's been going slower than I would have liked. And so I've been looking at these other options. And you basically gave me some honest feedback. And Eric said, hey, man, like, why don't I get you a sit down with Dan and we can just talk it through and work out what the problem is, what he thinks, et cetera. And so Eric teed up the meeting with Dan. We went out to MX Stores. The first time I've been out there, I was pretty blown away by the setup. It was insane. And eventually we went down to the cafe and we just had a chat about the business. And I think the thing that struck me about the conversation is not once did Dan tell us or tell me how good he was at Facebook ads. He basically spent time asking me questions like, dude, like, what is your profit margins? How much are you currently earning on Amazon? Is your Shopify store set up, et cetera? Asking all these questions. And after a couple of questions, he was basically saying, like, why don't you want to do it? Like, your Shopify store is set up. You've got all the inventory. Your margins are, like, strong, even strong compared to MX store margins. I don't get it, dude. Like, why don't you want to do it? I'm like, well, I'm trading my own portfolio. I'm investing my own capital. I've got a significant size portfolio that I'm working with. And I don't want to, that's my passion. That's the direction that I want to go. And I want to step away from the business. And he's kind of just like looking at me like I was a weirdo, right? And at one point, Eric turned around and said, look, like we've been speaking to Mark week in, week out, and we can see that his e-commerce business is not what juices him. But it's his passion for investing and trading that he loves. Like, he just can't get enough of it. And Dan's like, yeah, okay, I get it. But like this, like, just go out there and prove the concept. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, Dan, do you think that if I like spent 6 months on this, that I could get the results? And he's like, what are you talking about, 6 months? I'm like, do I need a CRO, conversion rate optimization person? Do I need a meta ads person? So, dude, I don't want to hear you talking about CRO until you're doing 2 million in sales. You're going to do the ads. I'm like, but dude, I'm telling you, I don't want to be spending my time on this. He's like, man, listen to me. He goes, your profit margins are juicy. He said, you've got the Shopify store set up. You've got an established business. You've got the inventory. Who's asking you to spend three to six months? Spend a week. Just go out there and try and prove the concept. And I'm like, okay, as I'm telling this guy I didn't want to do it, he kept kind of just give it a go. Like, you're basically at that point with your business where you can just turn things on and see if it's going to work. And I think two things happen. I think at that point I realized that there's someone out there that who has been through this before who could kind of relate to my situation. He said, look, I get it. He goes, you're in a situation where you've had some success and you don't want to do the 100-hour weeks anymore, but you've also got this business that, you know, you don't want to leave money on the table for. And in the end, I think what he gave me was like a little bit of confidence from someone who's seen the road ahead, who does it every single day, who's not trying to sell courses, that I've got something that's worth working with and applying my time to. And he said something interesting. He said, oh, you know, is there any chance that your portfolio could lose 30% overnight? I said, yeah. Well, he goes, well, you know, how would that make you feel? I'm like, well, yeah, not great. He's like, well, you know, this is something that can be a little bit more certain. He's like, you know, this could be a $10 million business within a couple of years. You know, what do you want to do with it? And I said, I just want to double sales. And he's like, well, you know, it's possible. And I don't know. I think you know, Eric, you can kind of weigh in and from an outsider kind of see what you saw. But for me, I think there was a bit of belief there. Someone gave me the confidence to actually put my time on the line because there would be a potential for a great return on investment. And they basically said, if it doesn't work, cut it early, right?
Just bring the audience into this a little bit closer? Because at the moment it's very abstract. So how old is this business? How much money have you been invested in? What category are you in? Like, just paint a picture for the audience about this business in real terms so they can latch on to something real.
Yeah, awesome. Great question. So we've basically, our first sale was like end of 2018. So the business has been running on Amazon since then. It's just on Amazon USA. We're in the bedding niche. So the bedding and homeware niche, I guess you would say. We got our best year was like 2.7 mil US. And then we had some issues over the last 18 months where PPC gurus that were promising the world, that run podcasts, that have the systems, kind of won me over, and I gave two of these gurus a go, and they basically brought my profit margin from 27% down to like 8%. And so at the start of the year, I got rid of the gurus and I put someone in who doesn't have a profile. You probably never heard of him, and he's like one fifth of the cost of what these gurus were charging me. And all of a sudden the business became profitable again.
And where'd the revenue go? Where's the revenue now?
Yeah, we're probably at around about 2 mil. So we've dropped off a little bit, but we're profitable again. We're running at about 27, 28% margin. That's after advertising. So there's money in it.
And so now you're wanting to expand out of Amazon into Shopify, and that's what this whole discussion's about. You've got Amazon basically humming along at 2 million at 25% roughly margin US, which is a great business. And then now you're expanding into Shopify and you have to get your own traffic. And so now you're out meeting Dan to run social media. You're going to run social media traffic.
Yeah, we're basically going to focus on Shopify and Meta and email marketing.
What do you have to actually do? Out of that meeting, what did Dan tell you to actually do? What does doing the work mean?
Yeah, and this is where this has kind of evolved in the days since I met Dan on Friday. So he's like, dude, just get a camera and film the content yourself. And I'm like, oh, I'm not really the target market. It'd be great if my partner could do it. He's like, dude, just do it yourself. He's like, go speak to the girl behind the counter there at the coffee shop. She could do the content for you. And then that sparked the thought. I'm like, well, I live in Byron Bay. It's full of like tourists and foreigners, Spanish, Brazilian, people from France, all over the world. So I would get around the accent problem, given that most of my audience is from the US. And I'm like, great. And so that night I basically ordered 8 cartons of product from our manufacturers to my home in Suffolk Park. And I spoke to one of my mates who's basically run just Meta. And he was running his business and he's doing about $300,000 to $500,000 a month just running Meta ads. And I told him, this is what I'm doing. I'm ordering 8 cartons. I'm going to get the UGC content. He's like, dude, let me save you a shit ton of time.
Just stop, Mark. What is UGC? What were you thinking of doing before you tell us what the guy told you to do? What is UGC?
Yeah, awesome, man. I'm just assuming everyone understands these acronyms. So user-generated content, basically what we were going to do is approach people at cafes, approach people working in retail and offer them free product or a small fee in order to kind of use our product and then give us a review on camera, basically talk to us about the experience with the product. So user generated content. And so I spoke to a mate who's basically done this. He's like, mate, I'm going to save you a shit ton of time. Forget about family and friends. Forget about randoms on the street. Go out there and hire actors. Go out there, hire an Airbnb for 3 days, get 15 actors, 5 actors a day, 2 hours each session. Give them the scripts, give them the talking points, give them the brand story and film them. Get a film crew and just film them. And you're going to have 12 months of content filmed over 3 days. And the reason I like that approach is because I need runs quickly. I need momentum quickly. I need runs on the board quickly. I can't spend the next 6 weeks trying to work out if this is going to work or not. I need to know ASAP because I've had my team working on Shopify for the last 4 months, and we're like doing 5 or 10 sales a week, right? It just hasn't moved to the level that I needed to. And I just, yeah. So I think me coming on, me getting that confidence is kind of forced me to pull my finger out, come on board and like really move this thing along.
So Mark, this is exactly what I was talking about when you asked for feedback on the, you know, should I get an agency involved? Agencies will sit there and set up the ads, but the work is in booking the Airbnb, writing the creative, getting your actors in a room, getting your inventory to the Airbnb, getting a camera guy or a camera girl, and then doing all the editing. And this is what pisses me about agencies, like that proposal you got where they want thousands of dollars a month retainer that scale with the more you spend, and then equity in your business, and they do none of the actual creative work that is going to move the needle, what Dan told you to do. What would the budget be to do that, do you think, to hire an Airbnb and then the actors and everything? How much are you going to budget to do it?
I reckon it's gonna come in at around 15,000, because we're not just hiring one or two actors. We're going to hire like 15 actors and really we're going to do it properly.
How do you get them? How do you get them? Facebook Marketplace, cold approach? What do you
do? Yeah, so there's all kinds of websites that you can use. You can use Fiverr, you can use Upwork, there's a website called Star Now. And so we're just going through all those different channels to try and
Facebook Marketplace was really good as well. There's little Facebook marketplaces of models around the country that you can hire directly as well. So look at that. James, you're going to say.
And you're just going to say for the people listening out there as well, UGC, we understand what it is at a high level now. Speaking to someone like Dan, you look at the MX store ads that he runs. And a couple of points here is, where is it specifically is the UGC going to be used? Is it going to be used in ads? Is it in social posts? Is it in blog? Where does the UGC actually get put to work?
Yeah, ads for sure. Ads and social posts.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, with that then, you'll then how many pieces of content are you looking to get? Is it going to be video? Is it going to be static, like photo? What sort of content are you looking to create?
Good question. So we'll have a film crew and we'll have photographers there as well. So we'll be getting a bunch of stills for every actor that comes through, and we'll be filming scripts with every actor that comes through as well. So we'll hit it from different angles. One will be like a testimonial. One might be a nighttime routine. One might be seeing the product in action. And then, you know, and then we'll do something fun as well on the last day. We'll maybe get 5 or 6 different actors there and do like a group shoot. Like I said, it's a home betting product. So we might have like a pillow fight or something fun to try and get attention.
And did Dan give you a strategy of sorts, like 3 social posts to 1 ad? Was there a method in the madness, or was it just
Dan's probably listening to this going, fucking, you've gone way over and above what I asked you to do. I asked you to do 1 carousel, 1 video, 1 still, and let's like come to me in a week
on an iPhone.
And we're just, so you know, like we're going to do that as well, right? In the next week, I'm going to get the best of all the content that we've curated over the last 4 years, and I'm going to create 1 carousel, 1 video, 1 still. I'm going to create a bunch of different content, and I'm just going to hone in that offer and make sure that it becomes a lead magnet. So I think the issue that a lot of people have when they start to run ads, and this is even a mistake that we kind of made as well, is you go too far and wide with the different things that you're trying to get to work, because you're trying to A/B test, you're trying to work out what works. But if you go out there and look at your competition, or you look at the best in class, they're pretty much running the same caption, the same ad, and different variations of that ad over and over again. And usually it's a big juicy offer, because that gets the clicks. And so we're just gonna do a big juicy offer, get the clicks, and then push it to these landing pages.
If people are lost on the specifics of exactly what this type of content looks like, go to Facebook and look up the ads library of brands that you like, because you'll be able to see all of their content on there. So if you don't know how to do that, just go to YouTube and say, "How do I look at a company's Facebook ad library?" And it'll show you how to do it. And then you can see all the content. You've just got to basically, when you're starting, you got to replicate it, but it looks, all the money is in the organization. Like, it's in the booking the Airbnb, booking the models, sitting down and writing the lists of all the shots and all the creative, bits of UGC content that you need. And the first time you do it, you're going to be going, "I don't know what the hell I'm doing." That's right. The first time you do it, you won't. But there's two types of inventory you need in a business. You need physical inventory of things to sell if you're selling e-com, and then you need an inventory of content to go and market the physical inventory. But you can't, in e-commerce, you can't make money if you don't have both forms of inventory. Eric.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know what I love? I was observing a lot in this meeting and trying to keep quiet and just listening to Dan and the questions he was asking and how Mark was responding. And it basically started, the meeting started with Mark with his, you know, trader identity sitting there going, you know, I'm kind of too good for this business. I really don't want to be doing this business anymore. I'm kind of over it. And then you've got Dan on the other side going, okay, so tell me who your competition is. How much are they doing? Where are they? So tell me your margins again. And then you can start Mark's eyes opening up a little bit and getting a little bit more excited because you got this guy here, right, that is one of the best in the country in ads. And all of a sudden, he's kind of like reaffirming what he already knows, but just hearing it from him, you can see his demeanor change. And then, but the whole time, Mark was like, but I need a CRO person, and I need the ads person, and then I need the, you know, the person that's going to get the content. And Dan's like, Mike, you don't need any of that. And then Mark's kept going, no, but I need, listen, Mike, you do not need any of that, right? And I think what happens is we overcomplicate things. We think we need an expert in everything rather than going, you know what, let me just have a crack. Now, I consider myself quite lucky having someone like Dan there because, to be honest with you, it makes me lazy on not having to dig deep like someone like Mark and going, okay, ads and creative and this. Like, I've got someone like Dan that I'll just say, hey, bro, I need some ads done. Can you just run this for us? And he'll get it done for us, right? But not the content piece. And this is where I want you to be very careful, Mark, still. And that's why I'm glad you said it. You're also going to try the other way because Dan was like, try and get real, raw, relatable content as much as possible. Don't go and spend the 15 grand. And if it doesn't work for whatever reason, go, this doesn't work. Split test both of them. And this is the thing what Dan says, and I want everyone to listen to this very, very clearly. Get as much content as you can as possible. Good content, shit content, funny content, real content, serious content, right? And he always says it. What I do is like throwing mud at the wall and you see what sticks. Give me 50 pieces of content. We'll run 50 pieces. Two or three of those pieces will run well. We'll take the 47 down. I then want another 50 pieces of content. And the same thing goes. So sometimes you got to be making a lot of content to find those five or six that is going to generate 80% of your sales or 90% of your sales. But what happens is we do one or two or three or four ads, and I've seen it in our other companies, and then it doesn't work. And then people go, oh, this ads company is shit, or I'm not good at this anymore. It's literally testing and measuring. The best content usually is the one that isn't the professional one or the one that you don't think is going to work. The best piece of content we've done at MX over the years, right? We're talking 15 years. One of the best pieces of content was a little kid on one of those three-wheel scooters, right? Like a 4 or 5 year old kid listening to dubstep, pretending to rev it like a dirt bike. That piece of content, like you wouldn't guess it. So when I know your category, I know your product, but I want you to think about what are all the quirky little things you can do with that product outside of the typical setting, right? I mentioned a couple at the meeting, right? Just quirky little things that you might be like, that's actually quite stupid. That's good. Try it. And that's what I recommend people doing, right? The other thing is moving forward, and we've been talking about this over and over again. This is the hardest part, though, is getting the content, right? I'm thinking about it all the time now with what we're doing here at Unemployable. I just got off the phone with one of our partners saying, when we launch this product, I want a full-time videographer coming in and just getting content of you guys on sites, me, just in the car, at home, just all kinds of stuff. You know, just content, 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 and see what hits. And we're not even talking about ads yet. We're just talking about organic content that you could post on Facebook and Instagram. Then you can convert those into ads, But the reality is that's where the attention is. Like if you start really watch what I'm starting to do is instead of just being, scrolling through Instagram or scrolling through Facebook, right? Start seeing what's actually catching your eye, right? Usually it's content that isn't orchestrated. And I've been finding it myself and documented. What I would recommend is document it, seeing it in, in real life. What is capturing your attention? Because most likely if it's capturing yours, it's going to capture someone else in your own demographic that's, you might be targeting a similar type of product. So instead of just
developing those eyes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It definitely is. It's the questions as well, right? Like Dan was sitting there just peppering Mark with questions. Not once did he say you got to spend. He still doesn't even know how much he should be spending on ads because that wasn't even a conversation, right? How much you should be spending in CRO and this and that. And Dan was like, "Mate, peel it back. You're overcomplicating this way too much." But to the point now, Mark, sorry, one sec, is what I loved about it is he went into that meeting going, "I really don't want to be the guy. Dan, please tell me who I can hire or who I can bring on to do this for me." And that's when I went to you and said, "Listen," right when you said, "What's the other option?" The other option is take all your stock, sell it down, close it up. But you got a multi six-figure profit business already. That's the thing. It's not like this business is I have to deer on the side of the road. It's a good business. And as soon as you said who your competition is and what are they doing and where they are, that's when Dan started going, "Holy shit, there's some for the taking here."
Yeah, and I think one of the most valuable pieces of information that he gave during that meeting was after asking me the margins, he said, "Look," he goes, "let me make it really simple for you. You need to throw ads up, and for every dollar you spend, you need to get $1.50 back. For every $100 you spend, you need to get $150 back. For every $100,000 you spend, you need to get $150 back. That's a 1.5 ROAS, right?" He said, "and that shouldn't be hard to do. You should really be able to get to a 2.5-3 ROAS. But as long as you can get to a 1.5 ROAS, you're winning." And even the conversations that I've had with my team in the days after that, they've kind of like, "But what about this? But what about this? But what about the clarity on this?" And I'm like, "Guys, one goal, 1.5 ROAS. Keep throwing stuff up until we get a 1.5 return on ad spend."
And ROAS, guys, return on ad spend, right? So for every dollar that you're spending on ads, you're getting $1.50 in sales, which is the 1.5. 3 times ROAS is if you spend $100 in ad spend on Facebook or in Google, you're getting $300 revenue, gross revenue back. Just so.
For everybody listening, because we're going to move the pot on from this subject now, but Mark, you know, thank you for being so open about your experience here because you are not alone. So many people want to buy their way through the work, you know, like by hiring an agency or bringing in an expert instead of actually working from first principles and going, what actually does my business need from an inventory point of view where as it relates to content? And sitting down with a notepad and writing that list. Now, what does it take to get that inventory? And then actually doing that, there is the work. And we're doing go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say you might have seen my content. Basically, that's what I was doing Saturday afternoon. I was writing and I credited you for the idea. I was basically writing a to-do list. What exactly do we need to do step by step to kind of get to 100K a month or 10K in a week or 1.5 ROAS? And I just made a list. I'm like, this is what we do. What about this? No, forget about all that. Let's just tick the items off this list. Nice and simple. And it was funny because I actually had 2 meetings earlier that week with people that are in the unemployable coaching group about, again, trying to find someone to kind of do it and run it for me. And what struck me was that these guys are in exactly the same position that I am with their businesses. And it's like, that person doesn't really exist. And I think, it was the way that Dan broke it down. And this is the important thing. And I think I see this all the time. I've seen it within my team. I've seen it within myself. Is when you don't know the process, you try and create a system for a process that you don't yet understand. And that's never going to work. And the best thing that you need to do is sort out and find the people that know the road ahead so they can bring it back to first principles, like you just said. And what Dan did by bringing it back to first principles, he did two things. A, he gave me the confidence that my business isn't a dead dog walking. Like it's a business worth giving this a crack at. And he basically took the fear away of this consuming my life to like just prove the concept.
We did it, Mark, you know, like we're doing it with Dryplush right now. And I sat down with Kev and I said, okay, we need user-generated content, or we need content of our customers. What are the actual steps? So we went to Shopify, we exported our sales, we organized them by who was buying the most bags off us in which states. We sorted them to Queensland because we're going to start with Queensland. We identified the top bag buyers, people who are using it the most. We reached out to them and said, hey, listen, we're going to be traveling around Queensland, meeting our customers and just capturing some footage of our customers with the toilets, wherever they're being used. If you're using it as a bedside commode, whether it's in a van or whatever, we're giving away a 3-pack of bags for free. If we can just drop by for 15 minutes, say hello, see how you're using the toilet, would that be okay with you? And then Kevy got on the phone and booked them all. Then we've got the guy that to carry the camera, and then we've created a tour. Now that's the work. That there, sitting down with your guy, having a meeting, first principles, what needs to be done, who do we need, what does it take to do it, what do we have to give away? That's the bit the agencies won't ever do for you. And the thing about getting off zero with this is we sit there in fear and then we go, okay, solution, hire somebody. Solution, go get an agency. No, the solution is to create a list, do the work, and as soon as you start creating the momentum, you can see now with Mark, now that you've started moving, you've started filming, you've started doing stuff, all of a sudden it doesn't seem so overwhelming once you start. And once you start initiating the momentum, things start to happen and you start to move. And what I've noticed about everybody we've had on the pod who's done really well in e-com, they're not in the bedding business. They're not in the toilet business. They're in the content curation business. And this is what I keep saying to so many people. I've got friends, a girlfriend of mine, she sells travel pillowcases that go over your bed. Like I made her UGC content here in this room when we first got here because I travel with it. And she's a perfectionist around the product. She's amazing at branding. And I said, Jamie, forget about creating the product now. You've done it. And she goes, oh, I want to change the box. I said, Jamie, stop. The box is great. The product's great. Make content. Get your friends to make content when they travel. Give them a pillowcase protector and say, take this with you, shoot it. So I shot a video for her in this room saying, hey guys, I'm here in Florida, and there's one thing I never travel without, it's my, you know, cover. And I said, did it on the iPhone, texted, so tell me if you want something else done. And so you've got to become a content curator to when you're a startup e-com person, because that is the inventory that really matters more than most people just get stuck in that product creation and the logo and the box and all that bullshit, where the ones who crush, like look at Clutch Glue. Right, go and look at clutchglue.com website, right? The girl who makes the clothing that sticks to the clothing to your body. The website's really basic. She does millions and millions of dollars a year because she's an amazing content creator and curator. Same with, you know, CMY Cubes and so on.
Right. And that's the other thing that we try and do as well. The other shortcut that we try and take is download a software that has a bunch of UGC creators, and then slowly you get a bunch of part-time UGC hack creators that are sending things in that are like aren't even shot properly, that their head's half out of the screen. Yeah. And it's like, and it's just a slow, arduous grind. And the last thing we can finish off on this is, I thought, you know what, if I'm going to apply myself fully committed to this, I'm going to document my journey as well. And the angle of documenting the journey is not to kind of show how great our business is, but it's going to be to kind of show people how to cut through the noise when you really want to get something done. Because I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs have trouble with, is just filtering through the noise to get something done quick. And everything I do here is going to be about maximum ROI in the quickest amount of time. So, yeah.
Great stuff. All right, let's change gears to another form of wealth creation. That is real estate wealth creation. Eric and James have bought a site, or have got a site under contract in Burleigh Heads. Maybe you boys can just give us an update with where that's at, what you're planning, and what you're going through right now to ensure that you actually make money rather than lose money. Just give us a bit of an overview of that deal as much as you can.
Yeah, so exactly what you said. We're looking at site now that will potentially fit six luxury three-story townhouses on it. Three-bed, two-bath, two-car, prime location. And from, you know, when you're initially scouting a deal, you've put your feasibility and you're putting estimates in there, generally, you know, finger in the wind sort of stuff within QE, because you sort of understand what it's going to cost. You're ringing a few consultants, they give you a ballpark number. And as we're going through the process now, we're actually having real conversations and getting proposals from said consultants, from a town planner, from the architect, getting that cost evaluation, sitting down with valuers, getting actual what the thing will stack up and look like from the acquisition perspective, and also at the in retail sales perspective, talking with finance or funders, you know, non-conventional funders is what we're going to be using. You know, in other words, we're not going to probably be using our Westpac and your normal broker down the road who's going to put you in a resi loan. We're talking to more sophisticated funders that deal specifically with development finance only, and very, very creative styles of funding. I've done quite a few projects in the past where I've generally used non-bank funding, and the guys that we've come across again from the community, from Carson and Shannon, I'd certainly put them at the higher end of creativity when it comes to finance, that's for sure. So getting all their fees, everything down to the last nut and bolt, if you will, and starting to plug it into a real feasibility, a working feasibility, and trying to eliminate all variables to, you know, within reason. You know, the market certainly is a variable that you can't control, so you've got to have an opinion on that as well. But when it comes down to the dollars and cents, we're starting to get pretty close now. Eric and I were just on a call before the pod, really nutting out what it's going to look like from a GST perspective, looking at the initial proposal and feasibility that these the funding guys put through, and breaking theirs apart, and then putting ours up against it and matching up and trying to find the holes in theirs, and also looking for holes in ours to try and get it really, really, really dialed in, so the least amount of surprises as possible.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
Can we? Okay, so let's bring the audience in again. At the moment, it's abstract. So that you've been looking for a deal, James, that you can, you're looking for a house that you can subdivide and add value by building, knocking the house down and building townhouses. So what did you find? Like, give us an idea of what and how you found it and how you put it under contract. Maybe just start there.
Yeah, so it was initially an off-market deal that had come through Eric's network from 12 months prior, about a gentleman had a block here in Burley. Eric and I obviously had a conversation, said, let's go put some deals together. Eric's got a pretty big passion for property. I've got a past in property and I want to get back into the sport from a development perspective. And so we looked at this deal. I had a meeting had a copy with the owner, tried to work out what his needs were.
It's an existing house, right?
Yeah, it's an existing house. Yeah, multiple dwellings. Old shit, I will call it. Needs bowling over. Well, in our view, we'll bowl it over, obviously. So units, it's got income, which is good. So it offsets the holding costs where you're going through the development application process. So I went and had a coffee with the guy, tried to work out what his needs were. And the guy didn't have too much urgency in the beginning. He then went cold. And then when I say cold, he said, look, that type of deal is not going to work for me. He originally wanted to keep one of the townhouses and stay in the deal. Then he didn't. Then he wasn't in a rush. Then he was in a rush. Then it was just all over the place. It was quite a long process to try and, work out. Kept in contact with him. And then lo and behold, I turned around, we looked at the internet, said, this is now on the market for what we were going to pay him off market. So anyway, he obviously wanted the comfort of an agent, take him through the process. And as it worked out that he'd now purchased somewhere else. So there's more urgency there again.
So how big is the land? How many units? How much was it?
Yeah, I won't go too far into that because it's we've got it under contract,
right?
But we haven't got it completely locked up. In other words, it's our right to either decline or accept. We're at that point in a couple of days, okay. But look, let's just say that they, you know, if you want to understand numbers, about 4.5 mil in, and roughly about 21 million dollars worth of gross realization at the other end.
And all the haters jump in the comments and go, oh, are you going to make all this money? You know, because Eric got savage last time in the comments.
It's definitely not 21 million and it's costing you 5 million.
Correct.
That's the acquisition price. Then you got stamp duty. Then you've got all the consultants. Then you got construction. Then you got fuck ups. Then you got rain. Then you've got all the shit that goes with it.
What's the margin? What's the
I'll leave that. I'll leave that. I'll leave that at the moment. Targeting. Yeah, I'll leave that at the moment. We'll pass on that one for the minute because it's as I said, quite a few people as I'm working out what's this pod and.
I guess what we should dig into a little bit is just the amount of work that's involved, right?
Mate,
so, like at the moment, when I look at the feasibility, all I'm trying to do is talk myself out of this deal, basically, right? I'm looking at scenario A, scenario B, scenario C, right? And you can't, yeah, man, the grass isn't greener on the other side all the time, right? You got to take things, you know, there's contingencies, we call them, that you got to take into place. Anything can happen in the market. If that happens and you don't build it, how much can you rent it for? What are the holding costs? You got to look at all these angles. But the reality is we've been there with financiers. We've been there with valuers. We've been there with builders. We've been there with town planners. We've been there with plumbers because of some piping issues. Like you're meeting all these people, right? All the risks. And then you're looking at the risks, then you're bringing experts and going, hey, is this a risk or not? Tick, that's not much of a risk. Okay, how about this? We had Shannon there, which is, you know, one of our partners from Unemployable Property, who's an expert at excavation. There's a little bit of excavation work that needs to be done. Shannon, come have a look at this. Worst case scenario, what is it going to cost to knock down this thing? Because it's a big property at the moment, not just a single house, right? It's a fair few dwellings on there. If we have to bring in dirt, if we got to build retaining walls, what is it costing? He's pulling out his calculator. They're going, okay, retail price per cube is going to cost you this to remove. Then you got to get new dirt in. It's going to cost you this. All worst case scenarios. Okay, what's the going rate for real estate agents? Okay, add another 1% on top of that. Put that in the feasibility. So, and it's the same thing in business, guys. This might be a property deal, but I want you guys to put on your business hats as well and think about when you're going into business, right? The questions that Dan was asking Mark was questions around how viable this business actually is. Let me find out a little bit about this business. Let me ask 10 to 20 questions about this business that will then tell, because Dan's the type of guy that'll be like, Mark, you're wasting your time. Go keep trading. Or, you know what, spend 6 to 8 weeks on this thing and let it tell you a story. And that's what the feasibility is. And it's the same thing in business, working out what the retail price is, working out what your cost is, what your margins are, what, you know, ad costs are, what your competition is doing, all these types of things. Basically what we call a SWOT analysis, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats in business. Is basically we're doing the exact same thing, but in property, we call it a feasibility. And when I talk about a feasibility, it's a fancy spreadsheet that has all these costs, GST and, you know, margins and every cost you can think of that you want to put in there. And then it tells you a number and then it tells you a percentage. And then you got to think about, okay, how else can I break this thing? What you're trying to do is break it so you can talk yourself out of it. And if you can't talk yourself out of it, that's when you know you've got a deal on your hands. And that's the way I look at things.
So guys, the listener who might not be in the property game, what is a minimum margin that you should make out of a small scale development like that before you'll go, this is not worth the risk?
The minimum that the banks will accept is around about 80% margin. So profit on cost. Now, that's not anywhere we want to play because you have a few screw ups along the way through, it just doesn't stack.
And James, just
so minimum we'd shoot for is 20, minimum bare minimum would be 25%
on cost, right? Not on the end value of the product. So it's going to cost you $5 million. You want to be making $1.25 million. Is that right?
Correct.
On top of the cost of doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so are you guys confident, like this is an opportunity for people who are new to property, but I don't think we have to sell too many Australians on the idea that there's money in real estate. Going to Unemployable Property, which is a new division of Unemployable, this is a bit of a shameless plug. It's free. So I'm plugging something free here, guys. Eric, how do they join Unemployable Property? Because when you go and join that community, this is where you'll actually see deals like this being broken down. And I want the important part, the cap that Eric's wearing, underneath that cap, I got one here, it says idea capital execution, right? What that means is that in business and in real estate and in almost anything where money gets made, there are three components. There's the idea, right, which is what you guys found. James went and found the idea, the property. Then there's the capital, which is you guys are now talking about, because a lot of listeners are going to go, oh my God, $4 million to acquire it and $20 million, that's way out of my league, right? These numbers are buku numbers, right? There are ways to do this without money. Shannon and Carson, who the guys are referred to, if you're new to Unemployable, we have a division called Unemployable Property. The two guys that run it 4 years ago, one was a carpet cleaner and one was a tractor driver, basically pushing dirt around as a civil engineer working for someone. They started in real estate and have $100 million worth of real estate projects in the pipeline now. And they started and still do almost all deals with none of their own money. So idea, you can bring the idea like James did. You can get the capital once you understand how capital structures can work. And then you've got to have somebody to execute it. And at the moment, it's Eric and James executing, bringing in the experts and so on. So Eric, where do they go to join Unemployable Facebook? Is it Facebook? How do they
do it? It's Facebook. So we have a free community, guys, on Facebook called Unemployable Property. And on there, we're posting things every day in regards to real life projects. I posted one last week of a project that we have in Palm Beach that we're going to be developing shortly. Shannon and Carson are on there every day posting stuff about their projects that they have and what they're doing with those projects. We're also going to be getting people coming in monthly, experts coming in and doing different types of webinars, talking about finance, and town planners coming in and talking about how to look at, you know, zoning mapping and just getting better understanding around finance and how to do a deal and how to look for properties. Because it's our belief in with Unemployable, the reason why we created Unemployable is to help people through wealth creation. And that's in multiple ways. You can do that through business, you can do that through real estate, you can do that through, you know, investing and trading like Mark, you can do that through, you know, investing in different types of crypto Adam does heavily. So everyone likes different things that can go down different avenues. But the reality is we want to teach you guys all about different aspects. And I've done really well out of real estate over the years. And that's why we're creating this free Facebook group. There will then be opportunities where you can work with us, you know, a lot closer. But this free Facebook group is going to have so much value in it every day. And it's not an open Facebook group, it's a private group. So there'll be a fair few questions that you have to answer. And then our admin team will either accept the application or not. And once you join, you'll be able to go on there and post about different things in your journey and ask questions. It's not something where people are going to be soliciting and trying to sell you things. And there's literally no fuck with policy. You know, if someone's trying to go in there and ruffle feathers, we'll just cut you off and see you later. This literally just about educating the average person, right? You don't have to be an expert. There's no stupid questions. There's people in there that are seasoned veterans like Shannon and Carson. And there's people in there literally asking questions on what do I need to look for? And what we've created is a 10-part series, which are 10 modules, right, from getting market ready, what to look for, how to look for it, to then
this is all free.
All free, how to finance it. And we're dropping these in there weekly, which is basically you're getting a course, right? We've been recording here in the studio for weeks upon weeks, hours and hours and hours of footage, not just with us, but with experts. So we've brought in our own town planners that we're using, our own engineers, our own financiers, our own architects, that are breaking down real deals that you guys can see firsthand. So it's not this hairy fairy, oh yeah, it's real deals. And we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's the beauty of it.
So guys, I would encourage you to get over there. Just go to Facebook. When you're in Facebook, search unemployable property. And the reason I wanted to ask these guys about what they're doing is because I wanted to highlight the fact that the guys in there running the community are not bullshit artists. They're actually putting properties under contract themselves. Eric's got a deal in Palm Beach right now. He's just finished a year ago the four houses that you built up in Burley Heads off one property. You know, James has just put this place under contract, you know, as he said, in round numbers, $4 million with a $20 million outcome with a lot of costs in between. But these are real projects. You know, when you get onboarded, they give you a whole document that outlines every single deal that Shannon and Carson did from zero to 100 million. They show you the address, they show you photos, they go through the numbers. We go through some of my commercial deals, some of Eric's deals. So it's an amazing free place to get content. So
Was there that link to the /2025 so you can get that document, or is that
yeah
on the
yeah
there? Yeah, that's going, still there. So
okay, that's unemployable.com.au/2025 and unemployable.com.au/2025, and that's where you get the document from our property day where we actually put about a dozen of our deals. It's a really
cracking day, and you can actually see, as Adam said, I don't know how many deals in that book. Is it 12 or 15 deals deals done in the book, and margins, and they talk all that sort of stuff. So you can start to get your head around what real deals look like, not some very free bullshit. This deal we're doing now should have come off. We'll break that down. We'll put some content around that as well. At the community, from you know how we got to the start line, we'll call it the start line, and then from there, each stage as we go through it, we'll document video, put in, you know, make it more consumable for the group.
And for any reason that you guys can't find Unemployable Property, because it's a brand new Facebook group that we literally created just at the end of the week before last, there's a thing with Facebook called indexing. So we noticed last week that we're not indexing yet. And all that means is we're not available to be found through the search. I haven't double checked it over the last couple of days, but if you can't find it for whatever reason, just email hello@unemployable.com.au. Just hello@unemployable.com.au. And we'll get our team to send you the link. And if we're not indexing for some reason over the next week or so, we'll probably just create another link /, and you guys could go directly to it with the link there.
Let's drop a link in there. If you're on YouTube, just have a look below and we'll get a YouTube a link to it below. So I wanted to close this week with one last story, which we've covered e-com, we've covered some property, and I'll cover a little story here at the end, which won't take long because we're at the end of it. But I thought it'd be just an interesting footnote to a different area of wealth creation. So I was in, I'm in Florence this morning, but I was in Cyprus earlier in the week, and I did a podcast on Monday with a guy called Tony Yazbek. And Tony is a super interesting dude. And his story, in short, is that he's Lebanese. He was living in Lebanon when the government overnight took possession of all the money in everybody's banks and just confiscated their wealth. And he was retired in his early 40s and woke up with kids in his home and his entire wealth gone. He was left with $70 in his bank account when he woke up in the morning. And I found out about Tony because he's been on all the biggest Bitcoin pods around the world because he became a massive Bitcoiner. And we had this really fascinating discussion about, he said, most people don't, he says, never in your life will you see things that I saw, like when you wake up in the morning and the very first thing in your mind is, how am I going to feed my kids at lunchtime? I've literally got $70. And I was talking to him, had a good discussion about what actually do you do? Like, what do people do? And there's all sorts of shit that goes on. He talked about how basically the whole city becomes a barter peer-to-peer overnight. No banks, no ATMs. ATMs don't work. No banks work. And how you walk out in the street and you have to basically barter for bananas and tomatoes and try to rebuild your life based on whatever goods or services you can trade with. It was an extraordinary discussion. And as it turns out, he was actually in Nicosia, which is the capital of Cyprus, on the day that I was doing the podcast from him. I was down in Limassol about an hour away. I had no idea that he was going to be so close. I actually got in the car and we went up and had lunch together up on the Turkish border. And it was just fascinating, like having a discussion with somebody who's been through something like that, sharing some of the shit that he actually saw. He said, I've seen people do shit that you would, like, I've seen one of my friends set himself on fire in the town square and you know, kill himself as a result of the stress brought about by this. So it's going to be coming out on Unemployable shortly, this discussion and how he traded. He was a cybersecurity expert. His superpower was tech, and he discovered Bitcoin. And so he would literally barter, teaching people how to set up a Bitcoin wallet for bananas, like, and for crackers and for food. And that's how he actually fed his family. And it was a really interesting discussion. Today he's got a business that's, you know, all over the world, helping people, you know, set up, you know, that sort of stuff. And what was interesting as well, I thought you guys might find this interesting. He has a company which is based in Panama now, which is, his company's based out of Panama. But again, he's on this thing called the Bitcoin Standard, where he basically is an advisory teaching people how to set up their own Bitcoin wallets and be completely off-grid. And he even helps with residency to different countries now. But he does not issue invoices in US dollars. He issues invoices in Satoshis. He doesn't have a bank account. He fully banks and lives off the Bitcoin Standard. So he has a credit card in his wallet. When we went and had the coffee, he paid with a credit card that is linked to a Bitcoin wallet, and he pays for all his living expenses and everything completely outside of the banking system. Isn't that wild?
Well, do those places that he pays, do they have to take the Bitcoin, right? Obviously, they have to.
It's just a Visa card. It's a Visa card. So
do the people receive it as cash, and they just debit credits Bitcoin from his account?
Converts whatever the price is to the Bitcoin instantly deducted in Bitcoin.
It's a card called a Revolut card. And so this Revolut card, he has to have Bitcoin in the Revolut account. And then Revolut use the Visa rails, and he pays for coffees and different things. That's all debited out of Bitcoin in the background. And like one of his services, go ahead.
No, I was going to say he might, like, it might create, it might have like a stable coin in there as well. So he would access the stable. What is it? Does it act, can they access stable coins, those accounts?
I haven't fully.
It's like the Lightning network. There's a special way that it does it. So,
but he literally paid with a card that's debiting in Bitcoin. And I mean, this is a guy that has highly intelligent, like proper, you know, cybersecurity expert. But living his entire life, he just travels the world perpetually. His company's based in Panama, which has territorial tax system. So Panama only charges tax on revenue generated in Panama. So all his clients and income is elsewhere. So he doesn't even have to do a tax return, travels the world, you know, living on the Bitcoin Standard. And we had this discussion about like what that's actually like. And he said that every year my life gets cheaper and cheaper as Bitcoin price goes up over time. Everything in my world gets cheaper. So I'm on my way to getting everything for free. And he says, I feel bad when people want me to pay them in fiat currency because of what I've been through. I would never touch that shit with a 10-foot barge pole. It was so interesting talking to somebody like in Australia and in the West. We sort of have this very, you know, what we assume is a stable currency. He said in Lebanon, like nobody wanted money from the Lebanese government. Nobody wants to put money in the bank. And so like nearly 7 million people in Lebanon. Imagine waking up in a city of 7 million people where there's no cash the next day. There's no ATMs working. Everybody's been like wiped out because the roulette ball dropped on zero and all bets are off.
Adam, this is crazy.
How long ago did it happen?
This is in 2019. It's not that long ago.
This is the important thing about Bitcoin. And for people, 99.9% of people watching this podcast and have heard us speaking about Bitcoin will look into Bitcoin based on how it relates to their world. And most of us listening from the Western world, right? And so people will look at Bitcoin based on what it means for them living in Australia, or they'll look at Bitcoin based on what people in America or the politicians in America are saying about Bitcoin. What I've found is that the best way to really understand Bitcoin is to dive into countries like Nigeria, dive into countries like Lebanon, dive into countries like Egypt, and study the things that have happened to their economic systems and their currencies. Once you look into Bitcoin from these call it third world perspectives, you see Bitcoin a completely different way. And I think that's the advantage when you speak to people that have been gone down the rabbit hole, they understand it from that point of view. And the best people that speak about Bitcoin are those with the engineering background, because they understand how sound the monetary system is with relation to these countries where things can be so goddamn fragile, not with relation to how things can be in Australia or how they can be in America. Most people in Australia and America are thinking about number go up, but go and experience a fragile economic system or a fragile currency system and then apply Bitcoin, and you'll understand it from a completely whole new level.
It's a fascinating interview, guys. I can't wait for it to drop. And he made some interesting messages, you know, like, unfortunately, a lot of people need to be effed before they'll take it seriously. And he said, in Australia and America, you know, your government's bought you a drink and taken you on a few dates before they eff you. But in Lebanon, they just like straight in night one all over, you know.
Straight in, no kissing.
No kissing, no nothing, just straight down to business. And he said, that's the problem in the West, is it happens slowly. And in the West, go ahead.
So I was going to say, talk about straight down to business. Did we see our good friend Elon took out one of his own companies and got a $12 billion tax fucking free kick on the way through?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting one to close on, because that clip that went up this week of me, you know, saying, you know, imagine if Elon moves his companies to Australia, the economic benefit of, you know, 120,000 Tesla employees and $5 billion is what it costs to set up a gigafactory. And I got I could not believe this. I got savaged in the comments again. I couldn't believe the anti-Elon sentiment. Like, people really believe he's a Nazi. They really believe that Elon Musk is a Nazi, that, you know, like, is it like a human being that was responsible for tens of millions of deaths? Psychotic.
The Byron Bay community page, right? The Byron Bay Facebook community page. Some poor cobber jumps on and says, you know, like, I'm doing rides from Byron Bay because it's really hard to get cabs and Ubers here. It's country town, right? He's like, I'm doing rides from Gold Coast. I do rides from Byron Bay to Gold Coast often. I've got a Tesla Model 3. And if anyone is interested in, everyone piles on and they're like, dude, why would you mention that you got a Tesla? It's like, this guy's offering a service. You want to know what car you're riding in? Poor guy. And the poor guy was like, I'm just telling, like, he didn't get the bad sentiment. He's like, I'm just telling you what car it is. Like, and everyone's just like, dude, Teslas are not cool anymore. And like, the negative sentiment was just off the charts.
Did you see the?
And it's like a bunch of sheeple.
They had an interview. They had, I can't remember, some guy from Fox, and they had all the Doge team in there and who they were and what they're actually doing and the outcome. Yeah. And like, you sort of read between the lines where all the hatred's coming from. Yes, the government employees are going to get retrenched and hopefully into higher paying private sector jobs. But just the amount of fraud, people actually, the identity theft, the stealing, 120-year-old people and multiples of them are now going to get their fucking, their free money that was fraudulently taken, ripped to pieces. So they're the people burning the Tesla factories, not the high paying ex government job.
The
fucking bludger that's been ripping the government with this fraud, you know, ID theft and getting five lots of welfare payouts. They're the people that are pissed, and it's usually that dumb mindset who's getting the fraudulent stuff is going to burn the Tesla factory down.
Elon said the best thing. He said, one of the things that I learned about my time at PayPal is it's the fraudsters that yell the loudest, that scream the loudest. It's golden.
It's a serious problem. I mean, in Australia at the moment, and I think in the West generally, that this anti-Elon sentiment is off the charts. And facts, they don't care about facts. I mean, the biggest taxpayer in the history of the world was Elon Musk. Nobody has ever paid an $11 billion US dollar tax bill personally in 1 year. Elon did. He has 120,000 employees who all pay tax, and Australians are so blinded. They're like, no, I don't want $5 billion that goes into investing in a gigafactory and 121,000 taxpayers that would produce. All they focus on, oh, he wouldn't pay tax. I'm like, dickhead, he's the world record holder for tax, you know? Like,
he's not trying to avoid tax ever. I mean, he did get a free kick with that acquisition with Twitter, smart play. But it's just like, how can you get these fucking morons to watch an interview? Like, we watched the ones with the
watch the interview guys
and the thread and the Scott Bessent, Howard. Then you got this, the Doge interview, and actually understand what they're doing. And they're going, oh, but the sentiment's going to be, it's going to be worse off that my 90-year-old grandmother won't get a payment. She's going to, no, it's going to be better off because she's going to get it.
You want to know why, James? You want to know why they won't watch it? Because they're too busy watching Married at First Sight. That's why. And that's
and
they're going to have no choice but to either buy a Tesla or a BYD. So you're either supporting Elon in the Western world, Chinese, or you're going to be supporting the Chinese. It's up to
you. You're 100% right. And I follow her because I reckon she's pretty funny. But Abby Chatfield, right, is doing podcasts on maths. And then she's promoting the Greens every second post, right? And it's like, guys, do you know the amount of destruction that the Greens are actually reaping on Australians? Like, Greens have policies that are good for the minority, and the majority are getting fucked. Like, our energy prices are getting super expensive. The overregulation is killing all of our farmers. Like, the policies are so bad for the majority, but you literally have these people out there that will watch maths and vote Greens while they're getting screwed, like, on a larger scale. It's like, well, okay.
So what is happening on maths last night, Eric? You're up to date?
You know what? I haven't watched one episode of maths, but let me tell you, I watched the interviews and I'm booked on White Lotus. And guess what's tonight, baby?
Yeah.
White
Lotus. Yeah.
I've been looking forward to it all day.
Same, mate. Episode six.
Is it still the same theme song?
Yeah, it is.
It is. I'll be honest.
It's
I'm not bad. A big TV watcher, okay? But that is the best TV program that has been directed, that has been written.
What a note to end on, Adam.
The videography amongst the but it's the best. Adam loves every minute.
I just can't get out of my head.
Anyone that knows this is going to be airing this Friday, which means this is... it's Monday here at the moment, right? So the one from last week,
no spoiler alerts, guys,
is the most disturbing thing. Adam is laughing because he can't get it out of his mates.
It's red panties at the Machado residence when
whoever, he is sick.
I'm disturbed. I'm still disturbed from the last episode.
It was pretty crazy.
Anyway.
Eric is promoting the most disturbing shit that he's ever seen.
I'm a disturbed individual, man. Well, what do you want me to say?
Wait, let's just look. If we all knew each other's sins, we'd laugh at our lack of originality, right?
Like, that's why the show is so good, because the way that it's written, you have these quintessential characters for this stereotype that are going out there and doing the things, but it's written in a way that each person watching the show thinks, oh my God, I kind of do that sometimes. Are they referring to me?
No. There's a specific part of the fucking last season that I never, ever, ever, ever do. Actually, two things that never get
done. Fucking season one where they go shat on the bed.
If I were you, Mark, I'd stop talking till you see it. There is a line.
No.
I mean, look, honest to God, I rarely blush in a TV show, but even I was like, holy shit, this is
so it's twice. There's two scenarios in the same part.
Yeah, I looked over at my wife just to make sure if she was sleeping or not. Just to actually, am I witnessing? Is this actually real? Or
did you have to get a dream? You get a cushion? Do you have to get a cushion and put it over your lap?
Oh my God. Okay, moving on, guys.
I'm not saying anymore until I've seen it. That's it.
No, you got to watch it. You got to watch it.
Oh, all right. There it is. White Lotus.
We have a product shout out that we have this week. And it's from a company called Chef Supply Co. That's the box.
Eric, just before you do this, I want the listeners to understand what we're doing, because we're not just flogging random shit here for money. We're not getting paid for these ads, guys, and the reason we want you to watch it is because these products that we show on here are products from listeners. So because our listener base is investors and entrepreneurs, we provide free ads to our audience and their products. So, and you also get to see what you guys are actually doing out there. So this is a real product from a real listener, and we're giving him some airtime. If you like what he's got, go and support him. The best way to help an entrepreneur is to buy their shit and leave them a positive review. So with that said, Eric, what do we got today and who's it from?
All right. So we've got Chef Supply Co. And it is from the founder is Adam Dodd. And you can find them at Chef, C-H-E-F, Supply Co, C-O.com. So chefsupplyco.com is their website. And they do all kinds of kitchenware, knife sets, cookware sets. And today, I think we've got, he sent a couple knives through. So beautiful packaging, as you can see when you open it. It's magnetic, beautiful packaging inside. Oops. Sorry. As you can see here, it says, thank you for your chef code purchase. Thanks for purchasing one of our kitchen knives. You are a small family business and support, and your support is greatly appreciated. If you have any issues with your products, please contact me personally. Happy customers make us happy. Adam Dodd, founder of Chef Supply Co. And then they've got we make custom knives. So beautiful little cards in here, beautiful branding. That's actually a sticker, I think. And this one here is a knife. So it's got really, really cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really, really detailed. So I think this is like one of their special knives. But check it out. Like, I don't know if that's, you guys can see that or not.
If you're on Spotify and you can't see this,
yeah,
it's like a stunning titanium kitchen knife.
Unbelievable. So this is called the Inked MK2. So the Inked, obviously, because of the handle. So very, very detailed. It's got a beautiful, beautiful protector on the bottom as well. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful blade, to be honest.
What's the illustration on the handle?
Yeah, the illustration on the handle is there's a dragon on there. There's a couple knives, there's a snake. It's kind of, obviously, it's called Inked. So probably influenced by tattoo artists. It's got a skull. It's got some, like a deck of cards. It's got a pirate ship. It's actually really cool, but it's glass.
Damn. Right?
Wow.
And the ink's awesome on the inside. Like it's proper.
It's a great looking
knife. And it actually comes with a leather knife cover as well. So when you're finished with it, you can obviously just place the knife inside the knife cover.
Nice.
And the boxing is beautiful. Yeah, but inside, right, the knife fits in. It's all velvet, fully cut out. So again, just want to say thank you, Adam Dodd from Chef Supply Co. If anybody again wants to check them out, chefsupplyco.com, and he's got his personal email here as well, adam@chefsupplyco.com. And I did a bit of search on them prior, and they do all kinds of kitchenware stuff, not just knives. Cookware sets, all kinds of stuff. And he even sent us a few. It's pretty cool. High quality. Stubby holders.
Right for stubby James holders.
Yeah. But quality ones, you can see it, you know?
So, guys, if you want to support a fellow listener and an Aussie small business, go over chefsupplyco.com. Guys, thank you for listening. It's been an amazing pod today. Hopefully you found it helpful, covering a few bases. Have a great week out there. Remember, guys, like, subscribe, drop a comment.
Look forward to your comments.
Elon.
I love them.
Enough of those. We had enough of those during the week.
Stop blushing about White Lotus, man.
I got to tell you, like, Cass and I, we're in Florence, it's 8:30 in the morning here, and already tonight we're like, White Lotus, we got to put on our little VPN so we can watch it on binge and watch it tonight, and can't wait.
It's so good. Like, I get upset when it ends because I'm like, I gotta wait another week.
No, it's so dark.
That's when you know awesome. You've got a great show.
The cliffhanger. It's all about the cliffhanger.
It's all about the cliffhanger. Arnold Schwarzenegger's son is one of the stars, if you haven't watched it.
What?
And he is one fucked up unit. That is.
Oh, my gosh.
And his poor little younger brother. Let's leave it there.
I think that with that monologue, the guy who talks about, you know, his experience of getting off alcohol in Thailand is one of the best monologues in TV history. And you'll know Sam Rockwell.
That is unbelievable, that monologue. I'm like, who wrote this?
Can you imagine the actor reading that?
Can you imagine acting, trying to keep a straight face in the
guy? Oh, my God.
The camera would be like, bro,
it's maybe one of the best TV monologues I've watched in my life.
My wife told me that this last episode that we're talking about with this scene, that when the actors signed up for the White Lotus, they weren't told about the scene till after. So they didn't even know that they would have to do what happened in those scenes.
The best.
Dogs. The best.
Yeah. Anyway, it's dark.
Let's wrap.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap on that. Right. Have a great week. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.